You're listening to audio from St. Luke Church in Lexington, Kentucky. If you'd like to learn more or donate to this ministry, please check out our website at stlukelex.com.
I have the distinct privilege of introducing to you Dr. Peter Williams, who is our preacher for this morning. Dr. Williams is the principal and CEO of Tyndale House, which is an industry leader in the field of biblical studies. Dr. Williams was educated at Cambridge, where he received his PhD in ancient languages related to scripture. He has taught at the University of Cambridge as an Old Testament lecturer, at the University of Aberdeen as a New Testament lecturer, and I have really enjoyed spending the morning with him. He's a delightful man who will do everything from talk to you about the scriptures to take pictures with fifth graders. So I think it really captures the essence of who he is. He's married to Catherine, who works with special needs children and is working on a master's degree right now, so she's quite busy. His daughter is 22. And she's finishing up her work at university, and his son is 18, who is actually traveling today to Thailand, so our prayers go with him, to be sure. Let me ask you to warmly welcome Dr. Williams this morning.
It's really a pleasure to be with you, and we're going to be looking at Jesus, and we're looking at him as a storyteller, the best ever storyteller, and we're going to look at his longest story, which is 3 minutes long. Wow. He could pack a lot into a very short story. We're going to look at his longest story, which you're going to find in Luke chapter 15. There was a really good sermon on this chapter just a few weeks ago here. But it's such a good story that there are lots of different things we can draw out of it. And so even though it's a familiar story to most of us, I think we're going to get some new things as we think about it. So let's have up on the screen Luke chapter 15 and verse 11, Jesus' story. There was a man who had 2 sons, and the younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that's coming to me." And he divided his property between them, both sons. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his field to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I'll say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to his father, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the son said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let's eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he's received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you. I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you're always with me, and all that's mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this, your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Well, it's a pretty amazing story, isn't it? I mean, I could just finish there, and it's an amazing story. I hope you can appreciate that. To get all of that into 3 minutes, it's pretty amazing, because it deals with basic family dynamics. Father, relationship with children, sibling dynamics. It can go anywhere, it can travel anywhere, it will work. The basic issues of authority between the generations and the idea of escaping for freedom from your parents. Every generation goes through that. And then the issue of obeying parents and contrasting siblings. It's all there. And you can get this as a kid. You can get this if you are a parent. You can see the emotional elements of this. And this story has a really high level of emotional intelligence behind it for Jesus to be able to encapsulate all of that. But Jesus also switches emotions on and off in the story. There was this point in verse 27 when the older brother comes back and he asks the servant what these things meant. And the servant said this, simply, your brother has come, your father's killed the fattened calf because he's received him back safe and sound. There is no emotion whatsoever in those words. It's just a factual report about what has happened. That is a complete contrast with how the dad sees it. My son was dead and is alive again. He's lost and is found. Or complete contrast with the next verse where he's angry and refuses to go in. It's really amazing how Jesus can switch the emotions on and off. Or think about the emotional intelligence of this. He's actually telling the story to four different groups of people. He's telling it, according to the first two verses of Luke 15, to tax collectors, sinners, Pharisees, and scribes. What it says is tax collectors and sinners are coming close to Jesus. Scribes and Pharisees are grumbling because they're getting too close to him. So he tells this story. Now, tax collectors are people who are happy to take your money that you're about to donate to the temple and give it to the Romans to pay some soldiers so they can guard you and keep you under the thumb. Okay, so you're not really happy with tax collectors. Tax collectors are sellouts, people who are Jews who are not working for their country. They're actually working for the other side. You're not happy with them. They're not interested in the Bible. They're interested in money. And then you've got sinners. Well, like everyone's a sinner, but like these are really special sinners. Really? They're so much into sin, that's their identity. They are flagrant sinners. They break Bible laws, they break traditional laws, they're sin. Now, the polar opposite them is a Pharisee. A Pharisee, what it means is a separator. They spend their time separating from sin, getting away from sin. So they're like studying their Bible really carefully so they can make sure they don't do sins. Now, of course, there's a problem there that in the Bible, sin comes from within, not from outside. I mean, it can be from outside, but comes from within. So there's an issue for them, but they study the Bible. Scribes, they write the Bible. They actually copy it out by hand really carefully. It takes ages to write out a Bible, and you get to know it really well if you're doing that professionally. And Jesus tells a story that will work if you don't know the Bible at all, and if you know the Bible super well, it will work, and it can work in any country. That's all amazing. Jesus didn't just tell this story. He actually tells a series of stories. This is a story about someone who asks his dad for inheritance. And what does dad do? He gives the inheritance to both sons. You notice that? Which means from this point onwards, the father doesn't own the farm. The older brother does. Yes, the father's still the head of the household, but the father can't dispose of the capital. Yes, he can order the killing of a fatted calf, but he can't sell the farm anymore. It's gone to the older son. So the older son has done amazingly well out of this. Now, what country does this take place in? I'm going to skip a couple of slides and go straight to Deuteronomy, okay? Because what we find is that in the Old Testament, an older brother would get twice what a younger brother got. But this is a farm, and we don't know what country it's in, because it's a story. But we know that when you have a farm, you don't split that into smaller portions as you go through the generations. Typically, the oldest brother gets the whole thing. So the oldest brother does really well out of this, and the younger son gets the sort of things that you can take away, okay? Movable things. So the older brother should be really glad, shouldn't he? He should be, little bro, I'm so glad you asked Dad for that stuff. I just landed the jackpot. You made my life. Little bro, I love you so much. If there's anything you need, like, just let me know. And I hope you don't go away, but if you do go away, I'll be really sad and I'll miss you, and I'll be there waiting for you to come back every day because I miss you so much because you did such a lot for me. Of course, that's how he's going to feel, isn't it? No. But he should feel that way. I mean, really, he has landed the jackpot. So you see how clever Jesus' story is. Or think of the emotional intelligence as Jesus tells the story and the younger son ends up feeding pigs. Because if you're a Pharisee, you're thinking, this story is going pretty well. This guy's getting what he deserved. He dishonored his father, and look where he is. He's feeding these unclean animals in a far country. Or think about this. When Jesus tells the story, he tells it really differently from how we retell the story. When we retell this story, whether it's in Sunday school usually, or whether we do it in a film or fiction, Prodigal Son, the whole central main section is about the parties that the guy had. Remember, that's the whole thing you talk about. Jesus does all his sin in one word: reckless. That's it. One word. Why? Because Jesus is a good storyteller. Sin is boring. Sin, no story is ever better for having sin in it. Yes, you sometimes need to hear a story of sin so that you can help someone out, so you can sympathize with someone, whatever. But you're never better off after hearing it. Sin is fundamentally boring. And if he had named particular sins in there, he would have glamorized them. Or he would have made the story specific to a specific sort of sin rather than just reckless living generally. You see? But he's also telling a story of a son who wasted possessions. That's interesting. The very next chapter, chapter 16, verse 1, is also a story. It's a story of a rich man who has a manager who is accused of wasting possessions. So we have two stories in a row about people who waste money. How do you feel about people who waste money? Any taxpayers here? Okay, taxpayers. How do you feel about people who waste your money, taxpayers? Come on. Yeah, not happy. Any emotions? Anger. Yeah, you feel really righteous anger, okay? Yeah? So think about this. Jesus is talking to Pharisees who work hard. Along comes a tax collector and says, I'm going to pay Rome Incorporated with your money. You're about to donate to the temple, by the way. That's pretty bad, isn't it? So you're angry. You're angry on God's behalf, right, about the waste of money. Because God might run out of money if you don't give that. It's not going to happen, actually, by the way. But that's the sort of way we can feel. So you see, Jesus encapsulates such a lot in this story. But he does more. Jesus tells this story well by using words, specific words. He says that this younger son runs away, or goes away, and attaches himself to a citizen of that country. Ooh, doesn't that rub in? That this guy doesn't belong. He's a foreigner. Like I said at the border, I'm an alien. I like using that word when I come here. I say, I'm an alien. Or it says that he was longing to be filled with the leftover stuff from the pigs and no one gives him anything. What an amazing thing. Or the way that then what happens is that he's getting no food. What happens if you get no food? You die. He actually has to go to the rock bottom point before he wakes up. And then Jesus, for two verses, lets us inside his head. It gives us his thoughts, his speech to himself. That's amazing. Or another way that Jesus tells things powerfully with his story is through missing words out. What's the first word that the son says to his father? It's father. That's the word he says also when he rehearses the speech in his head and when he delivers the return speech. Okay? First word. What's the first word from the older brother's mouth? Not father. It's look, all these years I've been serving you. So Jesus does something by omitting that word because he shows you that though one son is far away physically, he's emotionally closer than the guy who is up close. Or Jesus does something powerful by omitting the end of the story. If you notice, there's no end to the story. It doesn't tell you how the older son responds. The last thing we see is the dad talking to the older son, saying, "We had to celebrate because this your brother was dead and alive again. He's lost and he's found." And then, bang, it ends. But think about it. It ends with a missing ending because then you have to fill it in. If you are like an older brother, and the older brother is like the Pharisees and the scribes who thought they were keeping the rules and they were never stepping over the command. They think of God as a hard person who just rules by command, not as a generous father who says, "Here's everything I have," who pays his hired servants more than they need. But they think of him as mean. And you see how that missing ending is powerful, because it's an invitation to say, "Come in and join the celebration." Let's look at it another way. Jesus tells three stories in a row. People are criticizing because he's eating with tax collectors and sinners, and it says he told them this parable. It's actually in the singular. If you look at Luke chapter 15 and verse 3, this parable, and then it's the parable, then it's the story of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and of these two sons. You think, well, is that one parable? Yes, it is. This is how it is. First, you've got the story of one of 100 sheep. Shepherd loses one. He leaves the 99, goes after the one, finds it, brings it back on his shoulders, and has a big party for all his friends and neighbors. That's story number one. Story number two, there's a woman who's got 10 coins. She loses one. She lights a lamp, sweeps the house, finds it, invites all her female friends and neighbors round. Now think about it. One is a story of something lost going away from home. It's found and there's rejoicing. Then there's a story of something lost at home and it's found and there's rejoicing. Then there's a story of a son who goes away from home and he comes back and there's rejoicing. Then there's a story of a son at home and the missing ending. But you know Sudoku, don't you? Sudoku, you use the numbers you do have to fill in the numbers you don't have. So we can fill in the ending and say, but if he were to come in, there would be great rejoicing. You go from 1% lost to 10% lost, you know, the sheep to the coin, implying 100% lost in this story. It's not just one son who's lost, it's two sons who are lost, but the father cares about both of them. One is obviously lost, the other one is not obviously lost. He's seen, at least in his own mind, he's always keeping his dad's commands. But he's also thinking of his dad as a guy, well, he's not thinking of him as dad, he's thinking that he's slaving for him when he's actually heir of everything. He says, "I never disobeyed your command. You never gave me a young goat." Dad says, back to never, he says, "Always. You're always with me. All that I have is yours," which is literally and legally true. So you see how amazing this is as a story. Jesus is showing emotional intelligence, intelligence about the choice of words, intelligence about the omitting of words, and omitting of all sorts of other things. He doesn't tell you that the dad is looking out every day for the younger son, but you realize he is. He doesn't tell you the older son is working late in the field, but that's what you figure out he's doing. So Jesus is able to do things like a good storyteller by creating an edge around the story, not just things that are explicitly said, but also things that you work out. He actually gets you to do some work. That's a really smart element of a storyteller, isn't it? So you see, that's all pretty clever to do that in 3 minutes. But you know, there's a whole load more. Because Jesus has a whole load of extra Pixar details. Let me explain. You know the Pixar movies? Pixar, they make their cartoons so that the parents and grandparents can watch with their kids and get things that the kids don't get. Remember those? They put in extra lines for you. Yeah, it's great. And you always have a good chuckle. The kids don't know that one, do they? Jesus tells a story which will work if you don't know any of the Bible whatsoever, but will also work at a deeper level if you do. He's talking to Bible experts, and he's going to push them to their limits because he knows the Bible better than them. A man had two sons. What might that remind you of? Well, if you're a scribe, you know that the most famous person to have two and only two sons is Isaac, isn't it? Isaac had two sons. We're going to skip over that. That's another story. We'll come up to the bit in Genesis 33 soon. Okay. He tells you a man had two sons, and that triggers you to think about Isaac. If you're a scribe, Isaac had younger son Jacob tricks the older son Esau out of his inheritance. As a result, older son Esau is flaming mad, so little brother has to go off into a far country and look after animals. Now, he goes out with nothing and comes back with an awful lot. That's the difference from Jesus' story. But when he comes back, it's really amazing because he hears in Genesis chapter 32 that his big brother Esau is coming towards him with 400 armed men, and he is absolutely petrified. So that a lot of the chapter is spent giving you the details of how he splits his family. He's got more than one wife, four. That's a bad idea, but, you know, he splits his family up into different groups so that if Esau gets one lot, he doesn't get them all. So you're really expecting it to be dreadful when he finally meets Esau. What happens? Genesis 33, verse 4. It finds that Esau ran, fell on his neck, embraced him, and kissed him. If you're a scribe, you know that's the only time in the entire Bible that anyone does that. It is the older brother, the bad older brother, Esau, who had been cheated out of everything, is accepting his younger brother with love. Now, how does it work in Jesus' story? In Jesus' story, easily the older brother could think, hey, I'm losing out here. If this younger son's coming back, he's already had his share. I might lose a bit. I'm going to lose out, aren't I? Now, he doesn't know what we know, that he's already made a speech saying, at least in his own head, he's prepared to be a servant. He's actually someone who's prepared to work. The farm isn't going to lose out. But this older brother is mainly thinking, I'm going to lose a little bit. Esau lost everything, and he ran and embraced and kissed his younger brother. And that story of Jacob and Esau comes up again and again in this story. Here I am dying of hunger. Who says that? That's Esau coming in hunting, starving. Jacob's got some lovely lentil soup on the stew. And he says, I'm dying of hunger. And he sells his birthright. Do you remember the story? So Jesus is taking phrases from the Old Testament, putting them into his story. Or when's the only time someone has a meal of young goat? That's when Jacob is offering young goats to his blind father Isaac, who cannot see afar off, and he gets the inheritance, gets the blessing that should be Esau's. And what's he doing at the time? He's wearing his robe. He's wearing the robe of his older brother. Notice how the father says, bring out the best robe. Who's the robe belong to? It has to be the father or the older brother, doesn't it? The best robe. So you see how Jesus is making connections with that story. Or there's another one. Think about when Jacob went off to a far country. He worked for his father-in-law, Laban. Then he got loads of his flocks and he ran away and Laban caught up with him. And we're going to get the verse up in a moment, Genesis 31, that Laban starts accusing him. And Jacob bursts into anger. All these years I've been working for you. You see? So Jesus connects with that story, and there are lots of other connections with that story we don't have time to go into. What about this? In Jesus' story, suddenly the father says, bring out the robe, bring out the ring, put him on him. Who suddenly gets a ring and a robe? That's in Genesis 41. There's only one person in the Bible who suddenly gets a ring and a robe permanently, and that's the only other instant rags-to-riches story you've got in the Bible, which is Joseph coming out of prison before Pharaoh. Oh, and that's at a time of great famine. Did you notice, by the way, the great famine in Jesus' story? People often miss that out. People miss out the fact that this is not the story of the prodigal son, it's the story of two sons, And the son that we think of as prodigal isn't just feeding pigs because he made bad decisions. He made bad decisions, but also the country he happened to go to happened to be hit by a famine. So he's prodigal plus unlucky. Right? And that is different from how we think of the story. When we look at people's lives, and sometimes they're in a mess, and people have made bad decisions that have led to that mess, we forget that, yes, they've made those bad decisions, but they were less lucky than us. I mean, you understand. People have dealt different hands in life. And Jesus actually lets the prodigal son a bit off the hook in a way which his elder brother doesn't. Oh no, as far as his elder brother's concerned, he's in that situation because he's wasted all his money with prostitutes. How do you know that, older brother? You're just in from the field and you've just spoken to someone. You didn't even know the party was going on because you're so far out in some far field having left your cell phone behind. You know, how do you know what he was doing? Little brother has been off the radar. He's been effectively dead. He's been out of communication. He's not been sending postcards back from the brothel. So there's absolutely no way on this planet that the older brother can know that. The only source of that information is his imagination. Why are you imagining your brother's doing that? So you see how clever this story is. But it's not just that it's the story of Joseph getting the ring and the robe and the time of great famine. Joseph was the only other son, as far as his father was concerned, who was dead and then alive again. What a resurrection it was. Wow. But there's a bit more in this story. Yeah. Jesus is fitting quite a lot into 3 minutes, isn't he? And you start talking to people who think they're experts on the Bible. Remember that bit where the older brother says, "You never gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. This son of yours, you know, devoured your livelihood with prostitutes." And, you know, never gave me a young goat. I thought he gave you every goat on the farm. He gave you the entire farm. Oh, but Dad stopped me having young goats. Oh, sure, it was a vegetarian farm. Yeah, we know about those. Yeah. The dad who gave away everything and pays his hired workers more than the going rate has banned your friends coming round, has he? That's not plausible. So the only plausible view is that he does actually get to eat meat and he does get to invite his friends round to the farm that he owns. So why doesn't it taste good? Because his dad's there. That older brother wants his dad not to be there, so he can actually enjoy that measly celebration with a smaller animal than the dad's celebration is going to offer. It'd be easy to be physically close to the things of God and spiritually and emotionally far away. And this is a really powerful story. I wonder if there are anyone here this morning who's in that situation. Maybe come regularly to church, but you're actually far away. That's the challenge of this story and the missing ending. Because if you come and accept the Father and accept your brother, there's a huge celebration to be had. Don't miss out on that. But Jesus tells this story and he mentions friend, goat, and prostitute in a really close bit of the story. Where's the only other place you get friend, goat, and prostitute together? That's Genesis 38. It's X-rated. It's one of the three X-rated passages in Genesis. It's the story of Judah and Tamar. Remember that? Yeah, Tamar dressed up as a prostitute. Her father-in-law, Judah, not knowing who she was, gets her pregnant. When he hears that she's pregnant, he's actually all for having her burnt until he's told that's by you. And then he says, oh, let's just forget about it. he's the guy who's so zealous for God's law, and yet he's broken it himself, right? Judah, from whom the Jews derived their name, was sexually misbehaving in the land when in the next door chapter, his little brother Joseph was in a far country sexually behaving, resisting Mrs. Potiphar, right? So it's a pretty clever story when Jesus tells it, and how could a scribe not spot this? So you see how many of Genesis's greatest hits? Oh, but there's more. A man had two sons. How can that not remind you of Abraham? Yes, he had some more sons later, but he had two sons, didn't he? And they were really contrasting sons. Oh, Abraham, the only other guy who gave away his inheritance while he's still alive. Abraham, the archetypal father. Oh, and Abraham, the old guy who ran. Yes, Abraham in Genesis 18, verse 2, three guests come to Abraham, and he runs towards them. He's 99 at the time. Don't you think the scribes have noticed that? Like, old guy who runs, and he offers this amazing hospitality. What's he do? Look on to verse 6 of this passage, and you'll see that he welcomes the people. The very first word from his mouth is the word quick. First time anyone says quick to do anything, just like in Jesus' story. Quick, he says to Sarah, get three measures of flour, and he runs off and gets a calf. And that's the first time you have a calf in the Bible for food. So in other words, all of those things, if you're a scribe, you can't miss the fact that they're all there in Jesus' story. A man had two sons. You're a scribe. Adam had two sons, didn't he? Had some more later. Oh yeah, and the older one, Cain, was envious at the acceptance of the younger one by God. So envious, he killed him. And God is that passage in Genesis 4 where God's reasoning with him. Just like the father reasons with his older brother. See what Jesus has done? He's pulled together all of Genesis' top hits into a three-minute story. Genesis is 4 minutes long. It's almost like Jesus had written Genesis to make the material for this three-minute story. How could that be possible? Well, if Jesus is God, he made the world, and that's the way it could be possible, isn't it? And it's a story that will work if you don't know any of Genesis. It just works. It's a really deep emotional story. And if you do, it works at even deeper levels because you realize that how dangerous it is to be envious at your brother, or how welcoming Abraham was of complete strangers. And Abraham welcomed strangers, gave away his inheritance only to Isaac. Why only to Isaac? Because in Genesis 21, when he made a feast for Isaac, along came the older brother Ishmael, and he laughed. And Sarah said, he loses his inheritance. The older brother lost his inheritance through despising the younger brother. And you may be a scribe, you may be a Pharisee, you may think that you inherit the things of God, but if you won't accept that tax collectors and sinners can be your brother, you lose your inheritance. And then Esau, even bad old Esau, could forgive losing everything. Even Laban, who lost a lot to Jacob, was told he had to accept it. And think about what Joseph had to forgive. And all of that is packed into this story by Jesus Christ, who himself lived a life that's the most amazing story ever. And did miracles. And died. And then they couldn't find his body. And lots of people saw him risen from the dead. And he's Lord of all, and he's alive today. He is super smart, super compassionate, and super the one we need to be following, right? And I hope after sharing a little bit about this story, you'll be inspired to go more deeply in your study of Scripture, because there's a lot there, and not to underestimate Jesus. If he knows that much about his audience, he also knows everything about your life. Whatever you're going through, whatever tough things, he knows it. And he's not just knowing it at a distance. He's the one who wants to throw his arms around you. He's the one who gave his life for you. Let's just pray. Lord Jesus Christ, we thank you for your love, your amazing love, and your wisdom. And we pray that everyone here will experience that today, for your name. Amen.